stealing.
But it's all over! Dublin have won the All-Ireland for 2015. It's taken them two tremendous games, but they have retained their title. A truly remarkable achievement. And Dublin are again the champions. The three in a row.
All along the banks of the Royal.
My defense is impregnable.
Prove to everybody in the world that I am the best. Nobody can touch me.
Kalaski's just scored from a place ball, and he is now put one over the bar from play. Tyrone are very much on top in this All-Ireland final.
And 5-1 down, double player didn't blink. That meant resolve.
And it's a penalty awarded by the referee against Morgan. 21 minutes into this All-Ireland, and he buries it. Top corner.
But we're just trying to knock them down as they come. I don't know if we're counting. We've got a decent performance today, but as I say, when we look back, we'll probably do a bit better.
O'Callaghan, who's getting a lot of ball now. O'Callaghan towards goal. He's brought down. No penalty, but it is a goal. Tapped in with the hand by Niall Scully. And suddenly Dublin now lead by 5.
He knows how to score from this sort of range. Hart against Cluxton. Buries it.
For me, I wasn't thinking about winning at all this week. All I was thinking about was what's my performance going to be, what am I going to do in the performance. That's the process.
Crawley heading towards goal, uses the hand, and over it goes. The lead is 6, and Dublin are home and host.
Final whistle went. How did you feel? What were you thinking?
To be honest, I was thinking about my dad. You know, my dad unfortunately passed away this year. And even though he wasn't there, physically he wasn't there, he was there in spirit. So, you know, when that happens, you're just looking to the family and seeing the joy that you bring to your family's faces in such a tough year for us.
It's all down to the referee, and the referee has decided enough is enough. And the 4 in a row has been achieved by Dublin. 6 All-Ireland titles in 8 years.
Very much out of the blue when the news came through on Saturday lunchtime that Jim Gavin had stepped down as Dublin senior football manager after 7 years in charge. In a statement, Dublin GAA said that Gavin had informed County Board officer, his management team and the players that he was handing back the reins of the Dublin senior football team to the County Board committee. His role of honour, very much unparalleled. First ever manager to lead a county to 5 in a row. He won 6 All-Ireland football titles in total, 5 Allianz Football Leagues, 7 Leinster titles. Of the 21 major titles he contested, he won 18 of them over his 7-year spell. To talk about the legacy of Jim Gavin, I'm joined by former Dublin footballer Barry Cahill and by also former Tyrone footballer Enda McGinley. Evening, gents.
Evening, Nathan.
Enda, when we talk about that role of honour, are we talking about the greatest football manager of all time?
Without a doubt, just even in numbers alone, and the fact that he'd done the 5 in a row is something else. People can quibble about the different eras and the different strengths and the different difficulties associated with different eras, but the weakness of Leinster and during Jim's time. But bottom line, his record is second to none. The way he carried himself, the way he moulded the team, I don't think there can be any real argument. He obviously was working with a superbly talented team. It wasn't as if he took a team of no-hopers and brought them to the promised land and kept them there. He didn't make miracles, but in everything he'd done and again how he carried himself, I think he was he is hard to beat whenever you're talking about the greatest ever.
Barry, he didn't make miracles, but Paul Rouse was pointing out in the Examiner today, when you think back to 2013, there were strong contenders, but there were probably one of 4 or 5 strong contenders that would have been seen as on something of a level playing field around that time, and that would have been seen as quite absurd at the time that this side would go on and win 6 of the next 7 titles.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, at the end of 2012, we'd won the All-Ireland the previous year, but Mayo had obviously beaten us in the All-Ireland semi-final that year. Donegal were coming and had won the All-Ireland in 2012. Kerry were still very strong. Cork had won the All-Ireland in 2010. And Tyrone are very much still in the picture as well. So certainly there was no guarantees. But I think the big thing for Jim at that particular time was he wasn't inheriting a squad of All-Ireland winners, and not just All-Ireland winners at senior level in 2011. Dublin had managed to win the All-Ireland Minor in 2012 under Desi Farrell, and then Jim himself had obviously guided the under-21s to All-Ireland in 2010 and 2012. So there was a good group of guys at different ages and different stages in their career who had that All-Ireland medal under the belt. So, you know, he had a lot to work with. And certainly he went about his business and getting a very good management team in place. And throughout his tenure, not only did he shake up the team and also the squad, he actually mixed up the personnel within his backroom team as well to keep it all very fresh. So, you know, but he was so particular with his preparations and how he went about his business. He left no stone unturned in how he approached things, and he was very much meticulous in how he went about it. And, you know, the results speak for themselves and what he's done over the last, not just the 7 years, but obviously the previous 4 years with the 21. So it's an incredible 11-year period that he's had with Dublin.
Maybe my memory of the time is slightly distorted, but certainly my feeling was that after Pat Gilroy left and Jim Gavin was appointed, even though he'd had the success at 21's level, the appointment was sort of greeted with a shrug of the shoulders that, you know, it wasn't a big name, it wasn't this standout personality, even though he was part of the 95 team, that nobody really knew what to expect, that he wasn't coming in with a huge level of expectation. Was he underestimated at that time?
I think he probably was, and maybe that was just the nature of his personality. He did somewhat come in under the radar. Now, there weren't too many other obvious candidates, I think, for the job at that particular time. And I think Dublin have shown a good template there where you have guys, managers coming through at underage level. And if they are successful, then the senior job can be there at some point in the future. But I think he had a really good relationship with a lot of players at that stage. And straight away, when he came in, he was able to put his own stamp on the team, and he went about his business in winning the National League in 2013, which was obviously his first major competition that he was involved in. And Dublin hadn't won that competition for the good to 20 years as well. And then the big thing as well was trying to, you know, include those newer, younger players into the team and try and blend them in with the more experienced guys. He was able to give the likes of Kieran Kilkenny, who was just back from a 3-month stint in Australia, and Jack McCaffrey, Paul Mannion, you know, get these guys into the team. And, you know, it was crucial for Dublin that these guys actually picked up an All-Ireland medal so early in their career. For some of us, we had to wait for the very end of our career. But for those guys, getting that under their belt was huge. And obviously, they were able to build on that over the following 4 or 5 years.
Enda, when you talk about greatness, quite often the conversation, particularly with managers, would come back to how they revolutionised the game, how they dramatically changed the game. Did Jim Gavin do that?
In terms of the level of consistency that Dublin achieved, he probably did. They were unflappable no matter what opponents came out and presented them with. Their consistency across the National League, like some of the games that stand out for me aren't actually the big championship ones. They're the ones in winter on poor pitches when an opposition were absolutely going hell for leather at them, and they were maybe 2-3 points down, and somehow the team Dublin refused to get beat and came back and got something out of a match, be it a draw or a win. So it was that level of consistency that, for me, as a coming from an ex-Throne player, part of a good squad that we had, it was almost impossible to think how they were able to do that. Now, that is Jim. It's also the group of players he's working with and everything else that goes with it. There's lots of factors, but I think Jim, being there, being the conductor of that orchestra, has to take the major responsibility and the major credit, which he often deflected. He never really sought it out. But I think at this stage, now that he's retired, I think everybody can realise just what he did do, but it was the consistency, maybe more than anything else.
And Barry, the consistency with how Dublin finished game, like, you think of the important games of the Gavin era, and we might get on to the defeat of that era, the only championship defeat to Donegal, but the victories and the consistency, particularly of their play in the final minutes, right from that first All-Ireland against Kerry, when Kerry got back to within a point with a couple of minutes left, and they just finished the game like a steam train. The matches against Mayo in the closing seconds of games, where Mayo maybe thought they had them, but Dublin kept doing their thing. Even this year against Kerry in the drawn game, where it looked as though they were down and out. and somehow ground Kerry down in that injury time. That the way they finished game, it almost felt like it was a reflection of Jim Gavin, that he was so methodical, he was so humble, that the hard work never finished, and that also he had drilled into the players the way he operated, which was you just always did the same thing again and again and again, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the emotion of the occasion were.
Yeah, I mean, when you see Jim Gavin on the sideline, he's a man that's very composed, very much looks like he's in control of all situations. And I think that was reflected amongst the players on the pitch and the guys who would come in off the bench as well. They all seemed to have a cool head and were able to do the right thing with the ball at the right time and give it to the right guy to get the score when required. I mean, even when you go back to 2013, when the All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry, you know, they stayed in that game really well in the first half despite conceding three goals, never seemed to panic and eventually got over the line. And then similarly in the Mayo final in 2013, things seemed to go against them a lot in the first half, but they're able to get a handle on things at halftime as well. And I think that was another strength of Jim's, is that he was able to come in at halftime and use those 10 or 12 minutes to chat to the players, identify what the problems were, and then come out with a new game plan or a new team for the second half and to try and rectify them. But in that game against Mayo, you know, I think they only had nearly maybe 13 fit bodies on the pitch with a few minutes to go. But, you know, they were never beaten and they were able to somehow just get over the line. But I think a lot of that would come from Jim and the management team and also how they prepared, obviously, on the training pitch throughout the year.
It's probably a reflection, Barry, of the way that Jim Gavin has held court in that Dublin camp, that actually very few or any of the players have really wanted to come out and talk about Jim Gavin's influence over the last 48 hours. It may very well be at the direction of the man himself that he didn't want those type of conversations happening. But from the conversations you've had with current Dublin players, was there ever situations in the dressing room where there was a different Jim Gavin, an emotional Jim Gavin, a hairdryer treatment Jim Gavin? Or was it always back to what he knew, back to that methodical side?
No, I think it was always back to that methodical side. You know, he spoke about the process and everything that was attached to that. I think he very much gave off that persona of calmness and coolness, where lads are able to gather their thoughts and make the right decisions under pressure. And I think that's definitely reflected amongst the players. And I think another big strength of Jim's was that, you know, despite having such a competitive squad of 30 to 35 players who are trying to compete for the 26 and the match day panel, or even try and get into the 21 on the day itself, onto the pitch or into the 15, you know, you'd never hear any real discontent coming out of the group at all, which is extremely rare for a manager over a period of 7 years. You know, I'm sure there was a lot of guys who were disappointed during that period of not getting game time, either starting or coming off the bench. And you had to make a lot of big decisions as well down through the years with big personalities in the group, guys who had maybe won multiple All-Irelands and All-Stars and Players of the Year. He had to make the tough calls, put them on the bench or even not include them in the match day 26 at different times. And sure, that was hugely challenging for him and the management team, but the way he went about it and the manner, I think the players always took that in the right spirit and the right approach and would have seen it as the betterment for the group and also for Dublin GAA. And I think that's a testament to Jim and the team around him.
Barry Cahill and Enda McGinley are with us talking about Jim Gavin. But speaking on OTBAM this morning, five-time All-Ireland winner Dennis Bastic spoke about the first meeting between the team and whether or not Jim's achievement was more down to the coaches he brought into the setup.
No, I think Jim has surrounded himself with really, really good guys and they all bring something different to the table and there has been a couple of changes over the years, but ultimately Jim has been the number one and he's driven that forward, so he's the main reason, I suppose, above everything else. And I think what he does do really good is he demands the best out of everyone. So whether you're the kit man or whether you're the stats man or whether you're the coach, he's the man, our player, he's the man and you give 100% to get the best out of yourself. And that, I think that's what's driven that group forward.
Dennis, if you take us back to 2013 when Jim Gavin comes in for the very first time, do you remember the first time he comes in? Was it immediately evident that this guy had an aura about him that could lead his team to all-time greatness?
I wouldn't say he had an aura about him at the time, but I definitely recall the first meeting where he said that, you know, he's here to win multiple All-Irelands. It wasn't the case. We'd just been beaten Mayo quite convincingly. We underperformed that day and we were coming into off the back of a loss, a disappointing loss, and Jim arrives in and he says that he's not here to win one, he's here to win multiple. So that kind of gave us an idea of, you know, what this guy was going to expect from us.
Yeah, that was Dennis Bastic there speaking on OTBAM this morning about the backroom team. And arguably the most important was Jason Sherlock and his introduction in 2014 after the defeat to Donegal, the only championship game that Jim Gavin lost, where they went up against that blanket defence, tried to play their all-action style of football, which was brilliant to watch, but just didn't work. And rather than stick with it and all the praise that Dublin were getting for that at the time, Jim Gavin almost went about ripping it all up, starting again, bringing in Jason Sherlock, moving Keane O'Sullivan into that sweeper role. Was that the key moment that, I don't know if humbleness is over-exaggerating what he did, but actually having the awareness that what he was doing with Dublin just wasn't enough at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you talk about the tactical innovation or the tactical revolution, I suppose the revolution came with Jim McGuinness. And then Jim had the smarts to respond to that, and he essentially responded it by developing a possession game unseen before in Gaelic football that in the end completely negated the blanket defence and has eventually killed off the blanket defence as an effective tactic against everybody, because most teams now know how to play against it. That was on Jim Gavin's. Now, for me, his aviation training has been well talked about. And the thing that seemed to come out, very, very little came out of the Dublin camp. But one trend that whispers about their training, there seemed to be a huge emphasis on decision making under pressure, which obviously is straight from that sort of aviation background. Dublin concentrated on their decision making under pressure, and as the years went on, they made so few mistakes. Now, they had brilliant players. That takes huge talent to be able to do that, but they had that. And they emphasised then the percentage game, the team discipline sort of came into that too, that there was no egos. There was no egos about Jim. There was no egos about how you were playing. You made the correct decision for the team. And it was all of this sort of decision-making on the bedrock, that there was no egos, there was no stars. But all of that came back to Jim Gavin. So the response, it wasn't exciting football. And you're absolutely right. There was this sort of romantic thing about Dublin, and they were being built up in the press as this anti-defensive football, this lovely swashbuckling Dublin. But Jim Gavin knew that you have to be more pragmatic than that, and he took them down a defensive route. At times they still played attacking football, but they were as defensive as any other team, but they brought in this complete refusal to make mistakes, especially making mistakes under pressure or making mistakes in response to what the opposition was forcing them to do. They took any control of the game away from opponents, and that's why it was so difficult at times and so dispiriting to play against Dublin or to watch Dublin, because they literally strangled opposition. They didn't give them a chance because they refused to make mistakes because of their decision making.
This is obviously a bit of a love-in around Jim Gavin at the moment, but it does feel, if you're trying to pick holes, that like the only thing you can criticise Jim Gavin for is that maybe he wasn't emotional enough.
Absolutely. His media interviews became stuff of legend, really. Like, they were just absolutely, they were just so scripted and so lacking of any passion, the thing we love about the GAA, obviously. But a line I thought about whenever Jim Gavin was going away, and it's something I believe about all the managers or all the best teams, is that line from The Usual Suspects about the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that he didn't exist. A brilliantly managed team looks as if it's almost managing itself on the pitch, that it's really down to the quality of the players or everything else around it, that he himself didn't seem to be doing anything of real note. But to get a team going to that level, he obviously set the tone massively in behind it. Even what Bastic said about coming in and saying he's going to win multiple All-Irelands, and I'm sure he said that in a very quiet, egoless way, but he set the tone. So whilst Dublin looked, with the talent of players at his disposal, with the various wee advantages we often talk about that Dublin have sort of pushing in their favour in the weak Leinster, so they were going to get to more advanced stages more often. Them things aside, Jim Gavin in behind was absolutely key. And it'll be interesting to see how Dublin do in his absence, but everything that they've learned and the whole personality of that team has been harnessed by Jim Gavin. So whether Jim Gavin's there or not, the personality of that team and them players has been moulded by him, and that'll not change.
Barry, there were rumours this morning that Pat Gilroy had first refusal of whether or not he wanted the job back, but the expectation seems to be that Desi Farrell is the odds-on favourite. What do you think happens next with both the management team and whether this will affect certain players, considering whether they'll stay on, in particular with Stephen Cluxton?
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting few weeks ahead. Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, the numbers-wise, you certainly say that Desi Farrell would have a great shout of becoming the next Dublin manager. I think he's the only Dub to manage them to All-Ireland minor and under 21 success, and he's done that over the last 5 to 6 years. So he's a really good knowledge of all those players who are now in their mid-20s and early 20s, which is the right age to try and bring this forward a notch or two. And also, he's after doing a full year of club football in the FINA, so he'd have a good knowledge of the players at a local level as well. So I think that should stand to him. Pat Gilroy is obviously the other one who I would have worked with. It may be difficult for Pat, depending on his business interests. He obviously had to step down 12 months ago from the Dublin hurling position, which was a really tough call for him to make. But obviously he had to do with it in his own best interests. You know, Jason Sherlock is another guy who's been mentioned. He obviously would know the group extremely well, having been involved there since 2015 onwards. But, you know, there'll be a lot of expectation, and obviously following Jim Cavan won't be easy, but it's still a very attractive job for any Dub to get involved with. I mean, the quality is still there. There's a number of younger guys or club players who will be trying to get into the Dublin panel, trying to break into the team. A lot of their key players are certainly still in their mid-20s, like the Brian Fenton and Jack McCaffrey and Kieran Kilkenny. You know, they still have a lot of football ahead of them and a lot of experience there. And obviously the key one then is Stephen Cluxton, whether he will go or not, or whether Jim Gavin's decision will actually change that or not. You know, Stephen's his own man, he's going to make up his own mind, so it'll be interesting to see if even some of the players try and have an influence with Stephen or not over the next few weeks to try and persuade him to stay. I think for any manager who's coming in, they certainly would like to have Stephen involved. He obviously has been absolutely outstanding this year and fully deserved his Player of the Year award, and not only that, him being the captain and the leader amongst that group and the way he handles himself, I think any Dublin manager would want to have him involved.
And just to wrap up, do you think there'll be a pep in the step as the Tyrone players, the Mayo players, the Kerry players go back into training at the end of the winter?
I think all teams, having suffered the five in a row at the hands of Dublin this past few years, are bent on trying to grasp whatever hope they can. I think Jim Gavin going means that there is a slight chink there, but the likes of Desi Farrell, he's an absolute tailor-made replacement for him, almost the same type of personality, worked with him at underage, same route as Gavin obviously took. The talent is still there, and a fresh voice. Most teams get a bounce from a fresh voice. Now, how a five-in-a-row team does get a bounce, I'm not quite sure. But a fresh voice will help that Dublin team as well. It will freshen things up. It will put boys more on edge. And it's a new challenge for all of them. So, absolutely, all the other teams will think maybe they'll not be as dominant. But in the back of their minds, they'll be thinking maybe they'll come back fresher. So it's hardly too much of an opportunity there to be gloating on as you eat the turkey at Christmas.
All right, great stuff. And we'll enjoy the turkey at Christmas. I'm sure we'll be talking to you over the next few weeks anyways. And Barry Kyle, thanks a lot for taking the call.
No problem.
Thanks, Nathan.
All right, we'll take a very quick break. Football show coming up. Dan will be back in studio after 9 o'clock. We'll be talking about the latest ongoing shenanigans at the FAI. We'll hear from David Myler as well on the weekend's Premier League. Up next, though, it is Monday Night Rugby with Keith Wood and Rory O'Connor.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.